Okay, Michael, so you've had day one, your first day in Davos. I know we're both a little bit tired, which is ridiculous because we've only been here, been in action for 24 hours, but that's the pace, isn't it?
Yeah, it's relentless from the morning. They're just session after session, but it's been incredible so far and fruitful. And we got a little taste of home this morning, let's put it that way, meeting with the leader of Team South Africa here from the delegation, the head of the economic cluster. Not a very crowded room, just Mamoloko Kubai, the human settlements minister, but an interesting message. What did you make of it this morning, Alec?
Yeah, I think we need to explain this because people who've been to Davos before with the South African team have seen us. Or those who followed over the years what has happened here, they will see for some years we used to sponsor as a country, as taxpayers, the bar at the Belvedere Hotel. Anybody who walked past could go in there and order a drink and the South African taxpayer paid. Okay, not such a good idea, but supposedly it got goodwill for us. The other thing was that this welcome cocktail at 7 o'clock in winter, in the usual time, January, is dark. It's dark. And South Africa, being not the richest country of all, used to have these welcome, I can't call them a cocktail, but these welcome events, meet and greets, you know, who's here from the SA delegation. They're miles away, right at the other end of town. So you'd have to get up pretty early, walk in the snow, sludge along there. And I guess that's why not everybody went to it. But this morning, there was no real excuse for anybody to miss it, because it was 7 o'clock, the sun was up already, we had walking shoes, yet you're right. Okay, so who was there? The head of the investment bank at Investec.
Multi-choice?
Yeah, both MTS Patel and Calvo, the CEO, they were there from Multi-choice. Yes. But outside of that,
the chief executive of the JSE?
Of course, I apologize. Yeah, Leila Faree.
Yes.
But outside of that, that was the private sector.
Yeah.
And the public sector, Patrick Lamini from Development Bank was there. And then there's a lady.
And don't forget Brian Darmus from African Rainbow Minerals.
He's also private sector, yes.
And he had former ESCOM chief executive.
Quite a lot to talk about. But you interviewed her, the minister. I thought she came across well.
Yes, I think she didn't shy too much away from the realities of South Africa. But, I mean, you're not going to come here and sell yourself short. You need to sell the country. So there was zero point in harping on about the problems or the challenges, as government likes to say, that South Africa faces. I think she's wide awake to them. But she said we need to speak with one voice, and that's the purpose behind this morning's briefing, was to get everybody in the same room, so that there's some sort of unity of purpose for why we're here, being able to speak with one voice. I heard Leila Faree, is that her name? The JSE executive, also saying the same thing. We know the narrative, the negative narrative of South Africa, but there's no point in coming here to sell that to international investors. It's got to be about looking forward, and that's exactly what Mamoloko Kubai tried to do this morning.
Yeah. Again, it's a very, very downscaled government representation here. And she explained it. I asked her, I said, where's the president? Because the president's always here. Where's the finance minister? He's always here. Well, one day I suppose we'll have a she finance minister. And you'd have at least half a dozen cabinet ministers. This year she's on her own. And the reason is because of the postponement. The January Davos is in diaries. It's in concrete. That's when the trip to Switzerland happens. This is one has been moved out to May, and there's many other things. In the South African Parliament at the moment, they have budget votes, and you can't have a vote on your department and not be there. So that's really part of the reason that she said. Also, Finance Minister was supposed to be here in Gondwana, but he had to go up to an Africa-related Finance Minister issue. But in a way, it's quite... welcome to see South Africa tailoring its cloth according to its, I won't say its needs, but in this case, South Africa has taken a step back. It knew it wasn't going to be a big delegation. So it's a little room that's going to be Brand South Africa's house in one of the hotels here, but very close to the conference center. Not the much bigger, more expansive presence that we've seen in the past. But anyway, South Africa's here, and I don't know if they're going to be waving, we're going to be waving too many flags, because really the story of this Davos clearly is Ukraine.
Yes, just about this room that Brand South Africa, Team South Africa has picked out. I think it's in keeping with South Africa's means at the moment. It is a sign of the times. It's not extravagant. It's not lavish. And as you say, it fits the needs of a much smaller, a shrunk delegation. But it certainly
is. No dinner this year, Mark. I mean, that was like Klaus Schwab used to always come to the South African dinner. It was a great festive occasion.
You know, I'm just here for the free food.
Well, maybe January we'll get them to feed us.
Yeah, Ukraine is everywhere. It's one of the main themes of the turning point in history, which is the theme of the World Economic Forum this year. And we heard from President Zelensky. We've also heard from a number of prominent members of parliament from Ukraine, and of course the Klitschko brothers, Vladimir and Vitali Klitschko. They've been speaking a little bit earlier today, and it's all about the courage, the resilience, the ability of the Russian people and their military, with the help of the world in many cases, Europe especially, NATO, being able to...
I'm sure you meant the Ukrainian people.
What did I say?
Russian people.
Oh, goodness.
It doesn't matter. Well, Russia, Ukraine, you know, that they are having the fight, but we know what you meant.
Yes, no, my apologies. There certainly is. It's all about that. It's all about how they've been able to hold on for over 3 months now against what was considered the world's second biggest
army.
But
now it's more. It's not holding on anymore. And this is what came through. I went to a few sessions today. I went to a session on sanctions, how to make sanctions better against the Russians. I went to another session where it was called the Voices of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I've just come out of a session with six senators. Now, there are only 50 senators in America. Six of them were there, and one member of Congress, of the House of Representatives. And it's a very clear story. They're talking about winning this war. They're not talking about holding off, getting peace. They are talking about the war being won at the point that Russia has been kicked out, not only of the invasion that they've done recently, but from the 2014 invasions as well, which was where the Russians went into Ukraine and what they call the Donbass, into Crimea and what they call the Donbass. Now, this is a new story. The World Economic Forum is very strongly with Ukraine. Klaus Schwab, when he introduced Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, came to us via satellite. So he's still in Kyiv. But they've sent a delegation here. It seems like all of them are female, apart from the brothers, the boxers.
Yeah.
All the other MPs, the deputy prime ministers here, I saw in action a couple of times. Very impressive. She had people with her in the audience. So when there was a question that wasn't entirely on her remit, she was able to pass it on. But they are calling for a couple of things. They're calling for more military. They'll only win if they get military aid. The Americans, the senators, were very excited about the fact that they got the $40 billion through, and they know there's going to be another call for money for the Ukrainians. The West is pouring weapons now into Ukraine, and the Ukrainians, for the first time, are being properly armed. Remember, this war has actually been going on for 8 years. Mm-hmm. We only know it now because of the invasion, but now they're properly armed. They do believe they're going to win this war, which is a very different situation to in the initial stages, where it was just don't collapse, don't let the Russians take over Kyiv. And interestingly enough, the deputy prime minister, who, as you know, has got an unpronounceable name for us, was saying that when she traveled ahead of the invasion, they were given 3, maybe 4 days to hold out. So it is an extraordinary turn of events to sit here in Davos, come and see the mood here of the business community. On Wednesday, 100 CEOs have already signed a pledge they call it CEOs for Ukraine, Western CEOs. The Western world's fully behind Ukraine, and South Africa's out of step on this one, badly.
I noticed President Zelensky speaking about post-war reconstruction. The war hasn't yet been won, but they're talking about, he called it the patronage. Now, it's different to the South African patronage network that we think of, but to be a patron is to, for a country in Europe, or a to take over and partner with a city or a province or a part of Ukraine to help them in their reconstruction. He says, we will give you a tailor-made package, ways in which you can invest, ways in which you can assist Ukraine to get back on its feet. Because once you've been bombed back to the Stone Age, there's only one way, and that's up, and that's through investments. It's a hell of an opportunity, and Ukraine has realized that, and they're appealing to the world's powers to say, come and join us. They're confident they're going to win the war with they need long-range weapons, NATO-aligned weapons, they need financial assistance, and they need more biting sanctions. And they want every single bank to be sanctioned, Russian bank to be sanctioned. I heard that from the Klitschko brothers now. And they're saying, but time, this is time sensitive. We have many of the world's countries on board, but we're running out of time. Keep piling it in.
Yeah, they're running out of time because of the infamous ability of the West to switch its attention elsewhere. Mm. And that's the big thing. What is it also in the same vein, Mike? There is now a call by the Ukrainians to get the frozen assets of the oligarchs and start channeling that into Ukraine already to start the reconstruction side. So this is, let's look at it from a South African perspective. Politically, we've been really bad. We have aligned with the wrong people here. I know Cyril said we shouldn't take sides. Well, everybody else in the world has taken side against what was barbarism. But the second thing, ironically, this is a very positive thing for the South African economy, because even if Russia tomorrow were to declare peace, they will not be allowed to re-enter. And they have a lot of minerals and a lot of metals that only they in South Africa control the world supply on. And the most obvious of these is platinum and palladium, to a lesser extent palladium. But platinum between South Africa and Russia, that's it. Palladium, you take Russia out of the question, it's really North America and South Africa who dominate. And there are many other similar kind of metals. So what we've seen in South Africa is that the beginning of the Ukrainian war has boosted the value or the prices of commodities, mm-hmm. Many of which South Africa sells. I met with a guy in London, or he told me that he has now secured so much coal that they've got, I don't want to exaggerate, but he was talking about thousands of coal trucks that are driving through Richards Bay just from what he secured for the Germans. So you got to realize that they were getting a lot of this stuff from Russia. Now they're looking everywhere in the world, and South Africa is a prime beneficiary of it. So on the one hand, our politicians are, well, we can't say they're supporting Putin, because I don't think anyone can go that far, but they certainly aren't supporting Ukraine. But on the other hand, the longer this war goes on, and the more that Russia gets ostracized, the better it is for South Africa economically. And we saw that with the massive increase over budget in the revenues that was generated for the country in the first few months of the new fiscal year. So it's extraordinary how this geopolitics really matters. And for the first time in a long, long time, Mike, I started thinking, maybe we should be bringing in some commodities stocks into the BizNews portfolio. We've never done it before, but it's going to be a good run for South African commodity companies. You can see it. Everything's lining up in that favor.
Mm. I heard one of the Klitschko brothers speak about the world is addicted to Russia, and by that he means we're an addict to their oil and gas. And he said that there has had to be a major rejig in Europe, a realignment in terms of the oil and gas industry. And of course, the call is to cut Russia off completely. They are receiving more in revenue daily from oil and gas than they're spending on the war. So you can do what you want in terms of sanctions, but they're bringing in more money than they're spending.
And let's not forget, the United States is a country, the ultimate country of self-interest. And the United States is now talking about becoming the new provider of gas,
yeah,
the LPG gases or through fracking, to Europe instead of the Russians. So there's another reason why the Americans are quite
absolutely
happy to spend all that money. I had a chance meeting today, and it happens in Davos, you're standing in the security queue, with a lady that I interviewed a few years ago called Helen Clark. She was the Prime Minister of New Zealand. And she was telling me, she's now one of the executive directors at the United Nations with Pumzile. You might remember Pumzile, our deputy
Pumzile
president.
And Lambo Nuka.
Yep, the two of them are colleagues. And Helen was explaining the New Zealand situation, which is very interesting. They, as you know, or would probably know, they closed off their borders when COVID began, and they got everybody vaccinated. Because mm-hmm. when Delta came around and people were dying like flies, they had the vaccination drive in New Zealand, which today has 97% of the population vaccinated. Very different to Australia, where they haven't got as many people vaccinated. We know with Omicron, as she says, it's so contagious, you can't stop it. So that when that arrived in New Zealand, they'd already had so many people vaccinated that their deaths have been a fraction of most parts of the world. So they've come in for a lot of criticism, but if you are an island and you can isolate until such time as the virus gets itself less deadly and you can vaccinate your population, you have a result like New Zealand. And she was also saying that she believes the stats that The Economist has brought out, rather than the World Health Organization or indeed the official stats. The official stats say we've about 5 million people have died. The World Health Organization say it's about 9 or 10. The Economist says about 15. And she says that she knows with the WHO.
And that's million.
No, there's a million people. Yeah. There's a lot of people. WHO, they tend to be conservative because they're always challenged. But The Economist, the publication, whose editor I saw in action today for the first time. Wow, what an impressive editor that she is. Eesh. Anyway, The Economist has got, I think their latest one was between 15 and 16 million people have died. So this virus, please God, it is now calming down and behaving like other viruses have. But it was so interesting to get that insight from Helen Clark, who is very proud of the way New Zealand have handled it.
Alec, what's coming up on your radar tomorrow?
Yeah, well, tomorrow I'm involved in the Global Media Council events, and they set up special guests, and it's you get entertained for pretty much the whole day. So I'll be busy with that most of the time. A lot of Ukraine, a lot of Ukraine. The Klitschko brothers will be there to be interviewed, or, well, not interviewed, but certainly we'll all be pinging questions at them. And then the MPs that we've seen, the Ukrainian women who've been much in evidence, they will also be there as well. So it's going to be very much a Ukraine session. I start looking at crypto on Thursday. And I've also tried to find a few other little sessions around, but it's all about Ukraine this year, which is so, so interesting, given the South African angle, both politically and economically. And what are you up to?
So I'm going to meet with the chairman of the Davos Alzheimer's Collaborative. That's an event. It was supposed to be on Sunday. It got moved to Tuesday. So tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing the chairman of that. And as we spoke about on Sunday, it's about the equity in the research and the clinical trials around Alzheimer's, the disease. And it's going to be a fascinating conversation. I had a little bit of a background look into the chairman, fascinating man. And the stats is what I'm going to push him on, and just how seriously the world is taking the burden of this disease.
My other, red letter event this week is, I mean, surprise, surprise, Davos is a relatively small town. It's the highest town in Europe. That's really its claim to fame, and of course the World Economic Forum. But it's now going to have the biggest research institute into artificial intelligence in the world, and they're launching that on Wednesday. So I'm going along to the town hall, see who the mayor of Davos is. He looks like a pretty young guy, and he's either late 20s or early 30s. And that's exciting for the people of Davos, and go along there and see where the heart of artificial intelligence is going to be for the world, I reckon. Interesting developments.
So from TB to AI. Eh?
Yeah. And then in between, I'll be going to Meta. They've got a session with their chief technology officer, and Nick Clegg, who's the global communications guy. He used to be the deputy prime minister of the UK. And then I've got myself a seat this afternoon to listen to Henry Kissinger being interviewed.
The Henry Kissinger.
The one and only. It's extraordinary what happens in this divorce. Mm. Also today, Michael, spent almost an hour. It was only supposed to be 10 or 15 minutes with Ari Rotenbach, who's the new chief executive of APSA. And I think, like a lot of people, he's a no-name brand. And when he was appointed, I thought, well, it looks like a good appointment because he's from within APSA, which they haven't done for a while. They've been looking outside. And just talking to him, I can see he reminded me, I don't want to exaggerate, but very much like the Jim Collins Good to Great book, which tells you that you must invest in companies whose chief executives are humble and kind of stay below the radar, but they know what they're doing. That's the way he struck me. And if I was in the banking industry, I think you can mark up APSA as a proper competitor into the future. He took me through quite a bit of the strategy. It was an off-the-record discussion, so I can't share it with you, but I was impressed.
Well, that is the A-plus show on location in Davos. Episode 2, we'll be back again tomorrow.
Indeed we shall. Cheerio.